This is Heather Johnson, and you're listening to the Ayurveda Life School podcast, episode number 155, The Art of Ayurveda Cooking with Divya Alter. This podcast is for people who want to take their health physically, emotionally, and spiritually to a whole new level using Ayurvedic medicine, the ancient healing tradition from India. This is the Ayurveda Life School podcast, and I'm your host, Heather Johnson. Hello, my friends. Welcome to the podcast today. We are so blessed to have a beautiful guest with us today. And I think I am probably more excited than anyone else to get to talk to her today, because what we're going to discuss is my most favorite thing in the world, and that is food. And who doesn't love food and eating? And especially when we learn how to do it properly to help us to be healthy. So I want to introduce to you our guest. I'll tell you a little bit about her, and then we're going to have an awesome conversation today. Today on the show, we've got with us Divya Alter, and she has a beautiful breadth of history. She's a former monk. She's an Ayurvedic chef, an educator, an author. We'll talk about her books in a moment. And she is a founder of the popular Ayurvedic food brand, Divya's, and a restaurant in New York City by the same name. So I'm definitely going to have to plan a trip out so I can come and eat at your restaurant. But her food and the food products that she provides, they're really rooted in ancient Ayurvedic principles. And I think that's important. And for us to understand, because you can see things in the market that say they're Ayurvedic, but having something that's truly, truly has the principles in the creation, the manufacturing, and how they're brought to us is very important to find that balance. So Divya does that with her work. And something that's really exciting that's coming up is she's offering online cooking classes. And I know that for many people, cooking is not their forte. So having a class that teaches us how to do that is great, along with a best-selling cookbook. So I know you have a new one coming out, but you also have a book that's called What to Eat for How You Feel, The New Ayurvedic Kitchen, that came out a few years ago. And I guess you had more to share, because we're going to be blessed with another publication this fall, right? Called The Joy of Balance, an Ayurvedic Guide to Cooking with Healing Ingredients. So I'm just overjoyed to have you with us today. I think this is going to be a really beautiful conversation. And food is probably the question I get asked about the most by my clients and by my listeners. So I think all of us are in for a treat. So welcome, Divya, to the show today.
Thank you, Heather. It's so nice to be with you on the show. And I'm so happy to discover you and all the wonderful and very important work that you do. Thank you for having me.
Well, and it's interesting, as we start to talk Ayurveda, I feel like most people come to Ayurveda because they hear about some food or some tea or an herb or some medicine that's going to heal them. But I was curious, what is your roots in Ayurveda? How did you evolve with this? Is it something you were blessed and got to grow up with? Did you find it later in life?
Oh, I definitely didn't grow up with it. I grew up in communist Bulgaria. And exactly when the regime was breaking apart in 1990, I was 18 years old and I was going through an existential crisis. And I decided that I wanted to be a yogi or yogini, you know, female yogi. Mm-hmm. And I mean, yoga was very much unknown at that time. And I was kind of looking and praying, and I met a person who was running an underground yoga ashram in my hometown, Plovdiv, in Bulgaria. And I was like, oh, wow, this is meant to be. So I was blown away by the class, but at the end of the class, they served this incredible vegetarian feast of all kinds of foods with textures and colors and flavors that I've never experienced, because during communist time, we had very limited availability of foods and restaurants. And so I grew up in a very limited food culture. And I was like, yeah, this is my place. This is the food, because I was trying to be a vegetarian, but I didn't know how to be a healthy vegetarian, how to eat. I wanted to eat healthy, but I didn't know how to do it. I didn't know how to cook it. I didn't know how to combine foods and how to stay healthy on a vegetarian diet. And I found my spot. So I couldn't pay anything, I became an intern, and my first job was to chop vegetables and wash pots in the kitchen.
What a great way to get your start, because that's where it all happens, right? Is that actual connection with the food.
Yeah, because see, food is food, it's just so important what we eat, because it affects how we feel, not just physically, but also mentally. Mm-hmm. So as you know, in every yoga practice, and what to speak of the Ayurvedic practices, food is considered a central part of your protocol, or your well-being, or your lifestyle, because it affects us on so many levels. Unfortunately, I didn't grow up with being taught self-awareness. I didn't grow up learning how to determine, like, how to know how I'm feeling, really, how to connect with what I'm experiencing, and then trace it back to its possible cause. So today I know, it's like, if I eat something that wasn't the right food for me, and nowadays it's not so much because I know what's the right food for me, but sometimes, you know, I travel or I go to a party or something and I have to eat something that's not ideal for me. And then the next day I feel it. But I also know what remedy to use just to to feel better afterwards. But a lot of people don't connect the way they feel to the food they just ate, or they ate a day ago or 2 days ago. So that's one of the first things I started learning in the yoga ashram. And that's where I heard about Ayurveda. And later on, I went to India because I really wanted to study and connect with the roots of Ayurveda. I don't know if you've been to India. Have you been to India? Oh,
I have not. This is on my short bucket list. It's probably the number one thing on there. When you went, where did you go?
Well, I went to Vrindavan. So Vrindavan is one of the holy places, is the birthplace of Lord Krishna. And it's such a magical place. It's, when you're there, you cannot not be spiritual, because the whole atmosphere is just saturated, and it's a town full of spiritual people. And it's so easy to be spiritual when you're in a holy place like that.
Mm-hmm. It is, and surrounded by people who are practicing the same intentions too.
Yeah, in a very unpretentious, very genuine way. Mm-hmm. So it's very humbling to be in a place like that. And I studied at the Vrindavan Institute for Higher Education. I studied philosophy, Sanskrit. I studied raga music. I mean, I was like a sponge. I just wanted to absorb everything. And unfortunately, the climate in India was very difficult for me. I just wasn't used to such extreme heat, and then cold. And then the rainy season was really tough for me, extreme humidity. So every time I would get sick, the local doctor was an Ayurvedic doctor.
Of course.
so I would go there and he would give me these little sachets with powders, and he would tell me, take this remedy. But it's funny, because the main thing he would tell me is, he would say, you have to calm down your mind.
He was wise.
And I'm like, just give me the pill or the remedy or the powder, whatever you're giving. Because, you know, I'm used to the Western way of healing. It's like, here's the pill, your headache goes away. Mm-hmm. So he would say, no, but your mind is too active. You have to calm down your mind. And that's one of the main goals of yoga also, right? Yoga and meditation. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I was so young and rebellious a little bit. I'm like, you don't know what you're talking about. But then he would give me, foods, and he would say, okay, these foods don't eat. Like, he would often tell me not to eat chickpeas, and I couldn't understand why. And I'm like, but I love chickpeas. I'm a vegetarian. I need chickpeas.
Too light. You needed grounding. Yeah.
And then he would say, no, but you can't digest it. And then he'll tell me, eat these foods because you can digest them. They'll help you heal faster. And then he would say, avoid these foods because even though they're good in general, they're not good for you right now. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, that's what it means to use food as medicine.
Yeah.
And
so interesting.
He really sparked my interest in Ayurveda. I started feeling better. It's not just with the issue I went to him. Overall, I started feeling better. Mm-hmm. And then I understood Ayurveda heals the whole person. It doesn't just address the symptom and the disease itself. It connects that to the whole person.
Well, and you can't separate the two, because when you try to, you don't heal anything. You're just putting Band-Aids on top of it. And that's what we see so much in the West, and that idea of, you know, taking an Advil for your headache or something. And it doesn't cure it. I have a group that's in the middle of a cleanse right now that they're going through. And it's interesting how they are surprised at the amount of emotional and mental clearing that they've been experiencing by just simplifying and eating the right foods that they can actually digest. It's so funny how we don't make that connection, but unless we're taught that when we're young, and you know, you weren't taught that. I wasn't taught that when I was young. We just don't pay attention. We're not aware of that. So you're in India, you're having these beautiful experiences, and then you decided to go where from that? I mean, did you decide to start studying more deeply? What else did you do after that?
Yeah, well, India was the place where I really started experiencing Ayurveda in my own life and started studying this, because a big part of Ayurveda is self-care and preventative medicine, which you can easily practice at home. You don't need a lot of education. So these are the things I learned in India, and I started practicing for myself. And from then on, even though I lived in other countries and I traveled a lot until I came to the United States, somehow whenever I needed help, wherever I was, Ayurveda would come to the rescue. And I'm like, okay, there's a karmic connection there. So when I came to the United States, this was in 2004, and I came here for work. I was called here to be a part of a project. Like a couple of years after that, I started feeling really sick and like really like chronic fatigue, chronic digestive issues. It turned out a lot of inflammation. It turned out I had autoimmune disease. And this is when I met my main Ayurveda teacher, Vaidya Ramakant Mishra. And he passed away, but he brought the Shakavansya Ayurveda lineage to the West. And the Shakavansya,
beautiful.
It's a very old lineage. It's mentioned in some of the Puranas, these old Sanskrit texts. And what inspired me about him, and just I felt so connected to him and the way he presented Ayurveda, was that he was very authentic in terms of following the principles as they are recorded in the traditional Sanskrit classical texts of Ayurveda, like Charaka Sanhita or Ashtanga Hridayam, like that. But he also understood our conditioning in the West.
Yeah.
Because, like he told me, when he was practicing Ayurveda in India, in the local climate, the way to the local people, the way they live, all the remedies were working, right? And he tried to apply the same protocols to us Westerners here in the United States.
Oh, that was probably interesting.
And it wasn't working well. Mm-hmm. So he was like, I'm missing something. What am I missing? Why is it not working? Like, it will work a little bit and then they will fall apart, his patients. So then he realized we have very strong exposure to electromagnetic frequencies and radiation.
Yep.
I mean, it's there in India now, but 30 years ago, it wasn't so much in India, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we're constantly exposed to our cell phones, to computers, Wi-Fi, and so many other things. So that's one. And he said that really affects our vibrational channels. And that affects the flow of energy in the body and also the mind. It affects our mind, our nervous system, like that. That's the more subtle aspects of our health. And when they go out of balance, it affects the physical as well.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other thing is like too much processed foods. It's like
the diet is definitely going to be hugely different here versus in India. I mean, most things are processed. People don't cook anymore.
Exactly. So processed, packaged, frozen, microwaved, like all of this denatures the food. And then that food becomes like bad gasoline for the car, you know, like bad gas.
Yep.
And then it starts to clog us up, just like bad gas will clog up the mechanics of your car, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's, and then the other thing he said is a lot of stress. So it just, the lifestyle is such that we work too much, we don't rest enough, we stay up late. And so this really puts a lot of stress on our system. And then he started adjusting his protocols and then he had great success. So I was one of his successful patients.
Oh, what a blessing for you to find him, and especially to be in a place where you were having autoimmune. Because for most people in the West, they think that's a lifetime sentence, that I'm never going to feel good again. I'm just going to suffer now until I die. So that's beautiful. Was it a lot of it food-based and lifestyle? Probably a combination of the two, I would imagine, because he needed to quiet your mind, as your first teacher told you.
I'm still working on my mind.
Yeah, aren't we all every day?
That's like a lifetime project, but it's getting better for sure. It's like growing up a child within myself. It's like you have to deal with it that way. Well, you know, I experienced full like reverse of the autoimmune when I found out the cause. And the cause for me was asymptomatic infected root canal teeth.
Interesting.
Huh. I had no pain, no inflammation. Everything looked normal in my mouth. Even the x-rays didn't show much of happening.
Wow.
And even the Ayurvedic protocols in the beginning didn't work for me because we were not addressing the cause. I definitely felt better. It was a relief, but it wasn't going away. So then I started learning about holistic dentistry because I kept looking for the cause. And that's one of the main paths of Ayurveda, always looking for the cause of the problem.
Yeah.
And then I had a bioresonance treatment. You know, it's like a device and it reads the frequencies in your body. And this therapist kept telling me, you have really bad infection. And she would say exactly which teeth, there were two teeth, exactly which teeth they were. And I'm like, okay, I go back to the dentist and I said, let's do a scan, like a CT scan. And then the infection showed up and he said, oh my God, this is so bad. We have to extract the teeth right away.
Wow, that is so interesting.
Yeah.
So, I wonder how many people are suffering from things like that, that they just don't know about. They're doing all the things to heal and that root cause is still not being addressed.
Yeah. And unfortunately, a lot of Ayurvedic practitioners don't address the teeth because we're just not trained to look at the teeth. You can't really feel it in the pulse. I mean, you can read the pulse and you can feel inflammation, but you cannot pinpoint it to a particular tooth.
Yeah.
So that's why I always tell my clients, is like, if you're trying everything and it's not working, check your teeth like really thoroughly with CT scans. Like they are holistic clinics that they do bioresonance, so whatever methods they have to really examine carefully beyond the x-ray and beyond just checking your gums, because that could be the root cause of the problem.
Literally the root of the tooth.
Exactly.
There's just a little pun in there. It was a little funny on that one. So you moved back when you moved to the United States. Did you move to New York City? Because that's where you are now and that's where your restaurant is. So is that where you landed or did you end somewhere else?
Well, fast forward, I got married to my husband Prentice, and he's an American. I wasn't planning to stay in the United States. I really wanted to go back to India, but it just didn't happen. And you know, where love is, that's where you grow your roots. And we started a school, our nonprofit school, Bhagavad Life. And our first offerings were more like meditation retreats all over the country and even internationally. And then we were invited to come to the Bhakti Center in New York City. So it's like a spiritual center based on Vedic principles. And so we moved to the Bhakti Center, and at the base of the Bhakti Center, there is a restaurant space, which was not being used.
Huh. It was waiting for you to show up.
Well, I mean, they started using it, and before they offered it to us, we had a meal subscription service. So I would meet individually with clients, read their pulse, assess their digestion and their digestive needs, and then we'll create menus and custom meals for them, and we'll cook them fresh three times a week and deliver it to them hot at their homes or offices.
I really enjoy cooking, but I wish that you were here in Wyoming so you could bring that to me. I am sure all of our listeners are thinking, yes, I'm raising my hand, I would like that. But you do have foods now they can order, so we'll talk about that in a minute. So you started it that way. That's beautiful.
That was like the budding of Divya's Kitchen. And I also was, at the same time, I was teaching cooking classes to thousands of people. I mean, so many people came. And with the delivery service, it wasn't a very sustainable business because we just couldn't expand properly. Mm-hmm. And then with the cooking classes, so many people were asking me, we love your recipes, we love your food. Why don't you just write a book and open a restaurant? And I was like,
why not? That sounds easy, right?
Yeah, I mean, I learned not to say never, right? Because there's always opportunities in life beyond your imagination. And initially I was resistant, but then I was like, why not? So I wrote my book, and then we opened the restaurant soon after, just before the book was published. And it was a lot of work in the beginning. I have to admit, I didn't realize that it's so much hard work, especially when you're in a short budget.
Yes.
And yeah, I mean, my health declined a little bit because I was working 10 to 12 hours a day in the kitchen. It's not just sitting in the computer. It's actually mm-hmm. heavy physical work. And now it's much better. Now we could hire enough people and all that. But we're very grateful that Divya's Kitchen stayed open since 2016. Through COVID, we closed for just 2 months during the lockdown. But we're just very grateful that we've been able to stay in service and to be listed twice by USA Today among the 50 best vegetarian restaurants in America.
That is amazing. Okay, I did not know that. What a beautiful tribute. Congratulations.
Well,
that's
thank
so
you.
Great. So I have a question for you as regarding your restaurant. I've always thought it would be amazing to go into a restaurant that was Ayurvedically based and be able to select off the menu based upon what I'm dealing with right now. How do you structure it? Because I haven't gotten to come to your restaurant. So if I came in and I know that I have excessive heat or I'm having an ulcer or something like that, would there be, am I directed towards certain things? How do you set up the offerings there?
Yeah, so the menu, the way I designed the menu is like this, because I was like, first of all, we don't have time to explain the doshas to our guests. Mm-hmm. If somebody is really interested, we bring them the restaurant copy of my cookbook and we show them, I have little charts there and we show them. So, but in general, that, and that's one thing I learned from my teacher Vaidya Mishra, when he was advising us on how to set up the menu, he said that it's good to make it tridoshic as much as possible. So tridoshic means it's balancing for everyone, or more or less, and for all seasons. So whenever I make a recipe, and at the restaurant, all the recipes we serve are my recipes. They're from either the first book and or the second book, Joy of Balance, which is about to come out in September. But these are my creations. So when I create a recipe, I always think about the 6 days of food mm-hmm. and how to include the 6 days, incorporate the 6 days as much as possible, even if it's just adding a spice. Mm-hmm. See, I don't just add spices for flavor and make it delicious. It has to be delicious for sure. But sometimes like we have fresh paneer cheese dishes and I'm like, okay, that's heavy protein. We need something to break down the protein, I add black cardamom pods, not just for the smoky flavor that makes it really delicious, but it's black cardamom really helps with protein synthesis in the body. So that's how I'm thinking when I create the recipes and then the menu. And what we do is, I mean, on the menu, it says vata, pitta, kapha, or whatever dosha is best. Oh,
I just love that. Like, I just picture that and I'm like, that is heavenly. Okay. Sorry. That makes me excited.
Well, Heather, it makes sense to you because you understand the language. A lot of people don't. So in the way I describe each dish, I describe how it makes you feel.
So like the energetics almost of the dish.
Yeah.
Okay.
So instead of, I mean, we list the key ingredients, but we also describe how this dish is going to make you feel. And when people ask me, what should I order? I always ask them, so tell me how you feel. Do you need something grounding, heavier? Are you very hungry? I ask them, how hungry are you? Mm-hmm. Because if you're not very hungry, don't over order the large piece of lasagna, which needs a little more digestive power to break down. Mm-hmm. You know? Sometimes they don't listen to me today because they just go with what the tongue calls for, what their exactly. what their craving is. Mm-hmm. And that's okay. You have to enjoy your food. But the other thing is, we have a very extensive list of beverages. Chilled, we don't serve ice at Divi's Kitchen. We are probably the only restaurant that doesn't serve ice in New York City.
Good for you. Hold your ground on that one. That's a good thing.
and then the cold drinks have to stay refrigerated because otherwise they spoil. But we have a very large assortment of hot drinks, and we have different types of drinks for different types of digestion. So somebody tells me, oh, I'm feeling really congested and sluggish. It's like, here's the ginger tea or the chai for you. Mm. And somebody tells me I have high acidity, and I'm like, here's the pitta tea for you.
Yes, really, exactly.
So I also ask people, because especially people who know me a little bit, they come and they're like, I have high blood sugar, what should I order? And I can immediately advise them on that, because we have red rice, which is low glycemic. We have the sweet potatoes, roasted sweet potatoes, which will be a great dessert for them without spiking their blood sugar. And then we have the sugar down tea, which is slightly bitter. So if you come to a restaurant, like, you notice that you can also select the beverage that mm-hmm. will help you digest no matter where your digestion is at.
I love this. And this is what our kitchens at home should be like. They're basically our medicine cabinet. So what I have found with a lot of my clients is they don't cook maybe once or twice a week. And so that's probably my first barrier, is teaching them how to start. And for someone who doesn't cook, I mean, at one point you were 18 and just discovering all this and probably didn't cook. How did they get started? Because even some of my long-term listeners here, and you know who you are if you're listening to this, still do not like to cook. And so they either overcomplicate it and it makes them overwhelmed, and they say, I don't know what to do. I don't know how to cook for my dosha. They feel like it's like this big science they have to understand. And when we simplify it down for them, they're like, oh, it's boring. I don't want to eat that way. So how do you recommend for beginners to start when they literally don't cook very often?
For those of our listeners right now who are feeling that way, first of all, I have to say, don't worry, you're not alone here. And also get over whatever sense of guilt or feeling bad. And it's like, if you don't like to cook, not everybody is meant to be a good cook in this life, and it's not everybody's thing. Like, if you ask me to knit, I'm not a knitter. It's just not my thing. So everybody has particular inclinations in cooking. Sometimes some people just cook because they have to. They have to provide food for their family. They don't mm-hmm. enjoy it, but they have to do it. Don't feel bad if you're not inclined to cooking. Well, the first thing I would say is change your perspective. Hmm. So is cooking, like, cooking can be very enjoyable and fun. Like, for me, cooking is, I always go in the kitchen and I'm like, what new, something, because I'm very vata, I love to learn new things. It's like, what I'm going to learn today. So I always look for something new to learn. Mm-hmm. My vata and my pitta, I'm an avid learner. I love to learn. First of all, make the kitchen a space that you enjoy being in.
Yeah.
Because, yes. I mean, maybe you're just cooking breakfast. Maybe you're not making elaborate meals, but you have to make breakfast, or you have to fix something quick, pasta for your kids or whatever it may be. Make it an enjoyable place for you, and organize it in a way that you feel like a flow and joy, just being in the kitchen. Or put whatever flowers, pictures, you know, music, whatever inspires you. Mm-hmm. I have a lot of people don't like being in the kitchen because it's such a mess. You know, the cabinets are full of stuff they never use, and probably most of it is expired. And then there are all these packets that spill everywhere and stain, the turmeric stains your counter.
Oh, that turmeric. I have a pan that I only use for turmeric. My husband tells me everything I cook in there is orange and yellow afterwards from the turmeric. So I have my turmeric pan that I only cook in when I use my turmeric.
So. Oh, that's a good tip. So then So make it like spend a day or two just to organize it, get rid of the things that you never use, get the things that you need to use. In our upcoming masterclasses, which we are about to release, I have a whole class on setting up your Ayurvedic kitchen, or any kitchen for that matter. Mm-hmm. But I just give simple tips on efficiency and organizing, cleanliness and all that, and then time saving tips.
Yes.
Because you can be so efficient if you just do a little bit of planning ahead of time.
I think that saves most of us, because if you plan, it was funny. I was talking with my daughter last night. She's 14 and she says, "Mom, what's for dinner?" And I looked at her and I said, after 24 years of making dinner for this family, because I've been married 24 years, I said, that's probably the part I hate the most, is deciding what to prepare. If I know what's to be made, then I'm fine to prepare it. But it's that thought process and doing it every single day. It becomes overwhelming where you just don't even want to make it. So planning for me and having everything ready, so I know, oh, this is happening here, this is being prepared this day. To me, that takes a lot of the stressful parts out, so I can just enjoy cooking more.
Yeah, that's a great tip. That's a great tip. Yeah, there you go. And oh, you can also ask your daughter, what do you feel like eating? Mm-hmm. You know, something, and then they will be really eager to eat it afterwards.
Exactly. Unless they're, you know, leaning towards something that's really unwholesome. I'm like, no, that is not a dinner food. That is a special occasion treat, friend. When you're preparing and they're planning and getting ready, is there a lot of pre-work? Because some foods, Ayurvedically, we're soaking things. I think that can be, you know, you have to really think ahead if you're going to be making, you know, dosas, or you want to soak your beans, or you're mm-hmm. sprouting anything. That can take a little bit of more time too. But it's really, I feel like there's just some fundamental things that we can do when we're cooking. And for me, it's just paying attention, like being present while I cook. For one, then you don't burn your food, which, you know, if you're distracted, you tend to ruin things. But if I'm present, I just enjoy it so much more. I think it tastes better too.
Oh yeah, for sure. Because you're adding your intention to it. I have to admit, I burned my rice the other day and I ruined my pot.
Oh, that's so sad. It does ruin. And when you burn rice, that bottom is like that blackened. It does not come off.
You know, it happens even to somebody who cooks all the time, because what happened is I put it on the stove and it had a lot of water, but I forgot to lower the heat. And then I got a phone call and I went to another room and I answered the phone call. And then I started smelling the burn and I'm like, oh my God, I forgot about the rice.
Oh, see, it happens even to the professionals. We can all feel good if we've done that as well.
Yeah, well, don't tell anybody. But you're right, being focused, being present. And that's another thing that you know, it's being present is a practice, not just in cooking, but in everything else. That's why meditation is so helpful. Learning how to be present to the person you're talking to mm-hmm. to your children, you know, to everything that you're doing, makes it so much more rewarding. And also being present when you're eating.
Yes.
So a lot of people have either eating disorders or they have a weaker, unpleasant relationship with food because they just don't make time to eat and present themselves to the food. It's just we so easy to distract ourselves when we're sitting down to eat. Mm-hmm. So, and this alone can lead also to digestive problems. Like poor assimilation of nutrients can be linked to not presencing ourselves to food. Overeating can be linked to that, because your belly is full, but your stomach, your mind didn't eat with, your mind is still craving to eat more because you didn't bring the mind to your plate. And then you start overeating and then you become overweight and then you don't know where to stop or where to start to reverse this. So yeah, mindful eating is a big part, and it starts with mindful cooking.
I 100% believe that. My mother cooked every day. I think we maybe ate out to restaurants twice a year, and it was mostly due to financial constraints, and people didn't eat out as much when I was growing up either. I think that's more of a common thing now, but she didn't enjoy it. It was a chore and a drudgery, and we all knew she hated doing it. And so my grandmother was just the opposite. She grew up very impoverished. And so when she had more luxuries and wealth, when she was married and had children, she married a more wealthy gentleman, my grandfather. And so she was able to cook things that she could never cook before. So she loved to cook and she loved to prepare a beautiful table, and eating with them was always a special occasion. Every meal there was, you know, the placemats and the nice tablecloth mm-hmm. and the linens. And because for her, that was having the ultimate of luxury and pleasure, was to be able to prepare this beautiful food. So I have these two far different spectrums in there. So I felt like I didn't really know how to cook when I launched into the world. So it's all been just me practicing and trying. And we cook mostly at home. But I know when I started Ayurvedic living, there was confusion because I always thought there must be a food list that I should only eat those foods. And mm-hmm. so a lot of people come to me with that thought. And I wanted us to address that, because I think that's, for one, very limiting, and it's very stressful, because then you, for one, feel like you have to always ask something else what you should be eating, consulting always, instead of listening to your own body mm-hmm. and what it needs. But it takes that. Away that connection, right? Because you're always having mm-hmm. something outside of you direct what you're going to do. And it might be somewhere you start when you're learning, but as you get more awareness and more connection with the food and experiences, then you understand better. But I know that still, even people who've been coming to me for a long time are always wanting foodless. I'm like, okay, friends, we need to learn how to connect better. So if someone says, how do I eat for my dosha? What do you tell them?
I love how you said it. We lean toward consulting instead of listening, and that's the easy way. But even when you consult people, they don't listen. So listening is always...
That is a good point. That is true.
But yeah, listening, see, it comes back to self-awareness. See, Ayurveda lists 18 categories of compatibility with food, and dosha is only one of them. And now we're making it really complicated. Oh, now I have to think of 17 more things, not just my dosha. But the first thing is desha. Desha is the geographical location. Mm-hmm. So yes. always look for the foods that are grown locally, right? Because mm-hmm. these foods support you to thrive in this particular climate.
Yeah.
So, I mean, now we get food from everywhere, but at least make the major quantity of your food that's locally grown, because mm-hmm. that will support you growing in that same environment and thriving. Yes. And that's why people who come to our restaurant also, because I like to Ayurvedize recipes. So I love Italian flavors. I love to have Italian like style Ayurvedic lasagna or risotto, and I apply the principles of food compatibility and method of preparation and all that. But and that's why also Ayurvedic food should not be Indian food if you don't live in India.
I love that you just said that, because that is, everyone thinks they have to eat Indian to be living and eating Ayurvedically, and that is so not the case. So I'm so happy that you said that.
No, because I mean, we use Indian spices, right? Mm-hmm. But I use Indian spices, and I have so many recipes that don't taste like Indian food at all. And sometimes we get these negative reviews on Google, all these platforms, because Indian people come and they expect Indian food, and they're mm-hmm. like, this was no Indian food. And I say, we don't advertise it as Indian food. This is not an Indian restaurant.
No. Well, you go to an Indian restaurant, that does not mean you're eating Ayurvedic food. That's also good for people to understand.
That's the other way, for sure. Mm-hmm. But see, Ayurveda teaches us to eat locally. So how do you practice Ayurveda when you're in New York City, or when you're in Wisconsin, or when you're in Puerto Rico? You know? Mm-hmm. So you have to apply the local foods. But you apply the principles of compatibility, the principles of digestion, and you consider all that wherever you are, but then you use the local foods. So that's very important. The other aspect of compatibility is Agni. Agni is your digestive strength. So you may say, oh, I'm Vata Pitta. So I'm going to avoid cabbage till the rest of my life and broccoli because they're very airy food and they will aggravate my vata. And yeah, people also confuse. So how do I eat vata pitta? When do I eat for vata and when do I eat for pitta? But the thing is, when it comes to food, you have to eat according to the strength of your digestion with the season. So season, kala is the season. So we always adjust the qualities of the foods, not just what's growing in the season, but also the qualities, more warm, more hot, more spices, yes, more fat. We adjust with the seasons. So let's say I'm vata pitta and it's the flu season, I got the flu, which means I'm congested. I feel really heavy and sluggish and sleepy. And then I have a lot of mucus, which means kapha dosha is very high in me right
exactly
now.
Exactly.
So do I keep eating? And kapha dosha is balanced by astringent foods, bitter foods, pungent foods that usually imbalance vata. So do I keep eating the sweet foods, the sour foods, and the salty foods that balance vata when I have the flu and my
only
kapha
if you
is so
want
high?
To keep your kapha high. If you enjoy the flu, then I would say yes. But yeah, if you'd like exactly to alleviate it, then you have to shift what you're eating. I love that you went back to the taste.
Simple. We always go with the taste. Mm-hmm. And that's so easy to connect food to taste. It's just much easier than protein and carbs and all that. But so always eat according to the dosha that's out of balance, that you need to balance. Not so much your constitution, because once you do that, it will bring you back to your original constitution, your prakriti. But also eat according to the strength of your digestion, because if you're not very hungry, if your digestive fire is kind of low, not very hungry, you eat these heavy foods that you kind of, that you mentally think that they will be good for you, and then you're not breaking them down fully. They don't become assimilated by your tissues, and then they turn into the semi-digested matter called ama, which can then get into ama visho, which is the fermented vicious ama that's really bad for your health. So I always, that's why in my cookbooks, both cookbooks actually, every recipe I explain the different types of digestion, and then every recipe I give recommendations of how to adjust the recipe. If you, let's say spring season, our digestion usually goes down a little bit because kapha goes up in spring. But let's say spring season and you have very strong digestion, like you're hungry every 2 hours. So if you're feeling that way, then in the spring recipes, I give you the adjustment for the fiery digestion. So skip the chili, add this, you know, so you can adjust the seasonings and make the same food balancing for your dosha and your digestion.
That's perfect. It helps families too. I think sometimes if you're cooking for a group and your children and you look at, well, they're all different. So do I have to make 5 different meals for everyone in my family?
And I'm, good luck.
Unless you want to become a professional cook just for your family. So it's adjusting based upon the imbalances they're experiencing. I have a daughter that we struggle with getting her digestive fire up. She's not hungry hardly ever. She's so overjoyed when she is hungry. So we feed her things a little differently, but it's really the same foods. It's just the ratios and what spices she puts on. And there's some things she knows I'm not going to eat that because it's just too heavy. Whereas my son burns through everything really fast. And so he can eat some things that in higher quantities, and he's 17. I mean, he's growing and active, and he can eat some things that she avoids. And for a while she thought, are you putting me on a diet? Like, are you thinking I need to lose weight? Like, she was asking me these questions because she is more round. And I said, no, I said, this is so that your digestive fire can actually handle what you're eating. And so you're welcome to eat all of those foods, but let's adjust how much you're eating of different things. Mm-hmm. You don't need a whole plate of mashed potatoes. You're just going to feel, you know, you don't need lots of the meat. And so she's slowly over time leaned into foods that are more of the bitters, more of the astringents. We've introduced vegetables and spices that are a little heating for her. And when she has her digestion going, she's just thrilled. When she has an appetite, she's thrilled. but she knows I just eat smaller. And people will ask about that to her. And she's like, I just don't eat if I'm not hungry. I'll just have some tea. She has a lot of ginger teas and things like that. So I think it just is more simple than we make it.
Exactly. I mean, your kids are so lucky. Wow. to be trained that way, you know, because sometimes the kids do the opposite of what you try to tell them. But it's so nice that they're actually following your advice. And I'm sure her skin is really nice because, see, teenage years, like the skin, especially on the face, can get really challenging from eating all these deep fried foods and heavy cheeses and all that. But then they look so beautiful and they feel great. So lucky them.
It's been a learning experience for all of them, for sure. So I want to know more about your cooking class that's coming up, because we're probably getting close to our time here, but I just want to know, it's coming. I've been looking at it. I keep on going online and checking it out. What's the website link for the cooking class?
It's divyas.com.
Okay. So when we go there, we're going to get amazingness. I saw the syllabus of what you're offering, and I just feel like I will probably be your first student in that class. So they're pre-recorded classes, but then you do some elements of them will be live. Is that right?
Yeah. You know, I mean, I meet so many people every day who tell me, I want to eat healthier. I want to eat better, but I don't know how. I don't know how to cook it. I don't know how to eat it. I don't know what foods are good for me. And I've been teaching cooking classes. Education is my passion. I mean, the restaurant is my service to the world, but education is where I really like blossom. I just love teaching. I love helping people learn. And I've taught thousands of people over the years in how to cook, how to determine what foods are great for them. And with COVID, we couldn't gather in person. So, and so many people want to study with me, especially those who read my books. So we started online classes, and that has been going really well. We have a culinary training, the Ayurvedic Nutrition and Culinary Training, which is a 4 to 5 month program, just the first level. It's a certification program. But again, we still have like 60 people on the wait list for the next one that we haven't even announced. And I'm like, how can we help people learn, because the demand is there. Mm-hmm. So we recorded like very high quality video recorded classes. They're like masterclass style. And they come with an online learning platform, with learning activities, workbooks and all that. And they also come with a live question and answer sessions with me once a month. And we're about to, by the time you listen to this, the classes will be released already. So check them out at divyas.com. But these are 5 classes. One is seasonal cooking with Ayurveda, which we spoke about. And I guide you how to connect with the food through the 6 tastes and how to adjust your diet for each season. And then I show 4 recipes, one for each, because we can speak theoretically about food so much, but when it comes to the practical skill of actually what to do in the kitchen.
Exactly. That's where we all need help.
Yeah. So that's where I come in. So I showed you how to make the recipes, and the other 4 classes are a 4-part series called An Introduction to Ayurvedic Cooking. The first part is just more of the theory, and I explain Ayurveda in relation to food and digestion with motion graphics. I mean, it's very interactive, because you can get really confused with all the theory, right? The doshas. Yes. And all that. Clogging foods for daily consumption versus medicinal foods. We speak about meal portions. That's the first one. Second one is all about setting up your Ayurvedic kitchen, as I mentioned, and time-saving tips for cooking. The third one is about preparing staples.
Yes. So your basic.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And these are things that you can make ahead of time, like once a month or once a week. I show you how to make cultured ghee, the traditional Ayurvedic cultured ghee, from scratch, making the yogurt, how to make yogurt, churning it into butter, and then cooking that into ghee and all that, because people are intimidated by this. But once you see it done, it's actually very easy to do. Mm-hmm. And it's so much cheaper than buying it. I mean, we have retail products, and we make this cultured ghee as well for those who don't want to go through it, but it's empowering to know how to make your own fresh cheese or your own yogurt or your almond milk or your coconut milk. So.
Exactly. It makes you feel connected to the earth again.
Yeah.
Really, because you're producing this. Yeah, I think it's a beautiful thing. I'm glad you're teaching that.
And then the fourth final class is cooking with spices. So I speak about different spices, healing benefits, and then I give several recipes for spice blends. And I explain the healing benefits of different spices, different methods for cooking with spices.
Mm-hmm.
And we speak about quantity, because when you, a big part of Ayurvedic cooking is spices. And people who grew up with salt and pepper, like I grew up with
salt, me too.
Pepper, salt, pepper, and parsley and basil. And that was it. So then what do I do? How much turmeric? And what about the cumin? It just gets so confusing. So I explain all of this. And then by showing four different methods of cooking with spices, I also show how to prepare four recipes that are also delicious. And you can combine all these four recipes into a meal, like a very balanced meal. So...
Oh, see, we are all going to be blessed by this. I'm so excited. So excited for this. It's going to be a blessing to me and to those who are listening, because I know that cooking is so fundamental to Ayurveda, but we just want to feel empowered so that we're confident to actually do it.
Yeah. And it starts with a little bit of guidance and practice. And these classes are also an offering to all of you Ayurvedic practitioners who see so many clients, and you guide them sincerely, and you, I'm sure your clients sincerely want to get better. So very often the cooking part is the missing link. You know, they get the list of foods and everything. They go home and it's like, oh my God, how did I put all together into not just a meal, but a delicious meal that I really enjoy and it looks great and my family enjoys and feels nourished and satisfied.
It sounds like it needs to be a must. It's like, if you're coming to an Ayurvedic practitioner, you need to also take Divya's cooking class so that you know how to use the food that they tell you to eat when you go home. I think that's perfect. So beautiful. Yeah. Well, I'm just overwhelmed by the amount of offerings that you've created for the world. I think it's a beautiful thing. And Divya's Kitchen, that's going to be on my list of New York City hotspots when I come out to the city so that I can visit you there. And we can also buy a lot of products that you do have ghees, khichdi mixes, what, a mung bean soup, red lentil soup, digestive teas. So you have quite a few things that you can actually purchase directly from your website as well so that people can experience those at home.
Yeah, well, Heather, we look forward to having you in our restaurant. Just let me know. Come to my home. I'd love to host
you. It'd be great. Maybe you can put an apron on me and take me in the back so I can assist. That would be fantastic. Oh,
I'd love to cook with you.
And, it'd be so
and also,
fun.
Yeah, we have the products we're about to release. We just released a few new ones. So again, if even cooking is like too much for you, eating Ayurvedically can be easier when, at least to start with. So we have these packets. We have four types of khichdi packets, and we actually, I'm a perfectionist, if you haven't noticed, but I like to, I'm trying to be a healthy perfectionist, but I want to make it easy for people. So it's important to wash your grains and soak them, and the lentils also, and soak them before you cook them. So we do this at our facility. We wash and soak to get rid of the starch to make them easy to digest, and we dehydrate them again. And then our packets are mixed with all the spices, even the Himalayan salt and all that. So all you have to do to make a khichdi is simply, which is the one pot meal with grains and lentils, and you can add vegetables to it if you like. Bring 4 cups of water to a boil. And now we have single serving packages, which could be 2 cups of water.
Perfect.
Pour the packet contents and in 20 minutes it's ready. You can even go back to work for 20 minutes and come back
and then your food's prepared. And oh, that's so simple, so much nicer than all the complication that we make it.
Yeah, and it's delicious. And I understand we go through different periods in life when we're cooking has to go on the back burner, literally. Mm-hmm. Like you just gave birth, or you're going through some health challenge, maybe not for yourself but for your family, or you're going through some intense work period that you have to work 12 to 14 years hours a day. So all of that affects also the quality of food when we eat. So these products, the soups, the sauces, the tea, the digestive tea is amazing. And that's the other thing I wanted to mention is, it's like, if you can't follow anything Ayurvedically, don't worry, just keep it for the time period, don't make it the rule for your life, but at least drink a digestive tea that will help you break down the food better. And there are different teas for different types of digestion. I have this in my cookbook also. I'm sure you give your clients all these. Mm-hmm. You mentioned ginger tea for your daughter when she doesn't have appetite. So a little simple tea that takes 5-10 minutes to make can really go a long way to balance you more, even if you're not eating the ideal food. So that's how we try to help people.
I love it. So beautiful. And they can find you at divyas.com. And I just really recommend that you all look into all the things that Divya is up to, because it's something that we need to apply our Ayurvedic principles. We need to actually take them to the kitchen, do something with them. So it's been a pleasure to visit with you today, Divya. Thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you, Heather. Such a pleasure. I love talking to you. I can't wait to meet you in person. And
It's going to be amazing. And all of the listeners, if you are in New York City or near there, go and visit Divya. I think she would probably love to connect. You can tell her you heard her on the show. That would be amazing.
I would love to meet you all. Thank you.
Thank you, Divya.
Before you go, was this episode helpful for you? Well, the most helpful thing you can do in return is to leave a review in iTunes. The reviews are what keep the podcast going. And be sure to subscribe and share this episode if you loved it. You can connect with me online at AyurvedaLifeSchool.com, on Instagram, and on Facebook at Ayurveda Life School. Have a beautiful day. Namaste.